wolf.
Meow.
Yeah, we need some meowing out there.
Meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it?
Yeah. I can feel it. I can feel all of it.
Do you really feel it?
It's working. It's somewhere in there.
Yeah. It's working.
All right, cool. All right.
No gov.
Sound alive.
All right, that's
the
not
Freedom
alive.
Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah. Yep.
Worms.
So, do you know what really grinds my gears? I'm not talking about you guys, no. But when you post something and you're looking for someone, like right now, I'm looking for a C++ programmer, and it's for something that pays, and it's not me that's paying, so the person actually has some money, but should be working with me. So if you're a C++ programmer, send me a resume. Send me something. Send me a GitHub. Send me your interest about wanting to change the world in a very libertarian fashion. Send it to bipcoin.org. It's not working on Bipcoin, by the way. It's not for that. Bip, Bravo, India, Papa, Coin at gmail.com. Bipcoin at gmail.com. Write me there if you're a C++ programmer who wants to change the world and make some money. But it really grinds my gears when, like, you post something like, hey, who's a C++ programmer looking for one? And people post like, I was, but I don't want to anymore. And someone else posts, I could do it if I have to, but not a fan at all. That's retarded. That's just like, you're not answering the question. You're just, you know, showing off your apathy to the world. That's what I think.
It's like, hey, is there anybody that can do this thing for me? And you get 50 spam messages of, not me.
Yeah, not me. That too. Like, no, I didn't ask you. Or if you, one of my favorites is when you ask a Windows question and the answer people give is, yes, switch to Linux. Like, you know, if I'm like, I have to go on the show in 10 minutes, I have a question about a Windows driver problem. And someone says, yeah, the answer is, like someone that says switch to Linux at that point is like a religious fanatic. You know, they're as annoying as a religious fanatic knocking on your door and not leaving.
Yeah, well, chewing. If somebody's...
I hear someone chewing. Go ahead.
Yeah, if somebody's having difficulty with drivers and your first reaction is to recommend Linux for driver difficulty, then you are an idiot.
Yeah, I'm trying to learn Linux right now, and the only problem I'm having is with a driver.
Yeah, Linux is terrible with drivers, especially Wi-Fi. It's a huge pain to get drivers to work properly on Linux, unless you are really good
answer,
at it.
The answer would have been when I said, today when I also posted, you know, who can help me with this problem about this Linux Wi-Fi driver problem? The correct answer would have been switch to Windows.
Right.
Yeah, so it really grinds my gears, and people should stop doing it. But if you're a C++ programmer, I can use your help. So I guess there's a couple elephants in the room. There's a bunch of people who aren't on the Fiends anymore. Well, there's one person, there's two people that aren't. V's not on the Fiends anymore. And Jim Jesus is not on the Fiends anymore. People are probably going to be really surprised about Jim Jesus because he's a longtime Fiend. But I still love him dearly. We get along. V and I are still friends. There's no problem there. Jim basically is a really good radio host or, you know, talk show host. But not for this show. He's kind of been turning into, like, he's been turning this into the Lulberts, you know. And the primary purpose of this show is to bring liberty to people, true liberty, voluntarist liberty, to people who would not otherwise hear it. That's the prime and pretty much only main directive of the Freedom Fiends. That and have fun and have good audio. And, you know, which is why I spent 20 minutes trying to solve an audio problem at the beginning before the show when I had better things to do. But I do this all day long. It's what I do. But, yeah, Jim was just turning this into Lulberts, like, just wanting to joke and have fun, which is great. but it's not. When it doesn't, when you have like an hour and there's nothing about Liberty, and then another hour and there's 2 seconds about Liberty, it's not a Fiend show. So Jim quit. I don't know if I should say or not that Jim quit while I was writing an email to him to fire him. Or should I just let him have it? Have him say he quit.
It was kind of too late now, wasn't it?
He just quit, man. He quit.
The hamster's out of the bag.
He's the first Fiend to ever quit. I got to give him that. That's respectable. I have fired many a Fiend. All right. So what else? So the other 900-pound hamster in the room is that every first responder in the tri-state area of New York State, Connecticut, and New Jersey want to kill one of our co-hosts. Probably. So Jeremy Heisenhengler, good friend of all of ours, we like him, did a post last week when he was in a car stuck in traffic for like an hour, and he posted something about, and it was a funeral for a fallen firefighter who died in line of duty, and Jeremy posted something that I would never post, that was really that Phil would never post to. I don't think Lou would either. That was very not politic. He said that, you know, geez, why am I having to wait in line an hour for this? I don't know the exact wording, but he called the guy a parasite, you know, like a tax parasite.
Just to kind of be, he didn't actually specifically call that guy a parasite. He called the people that were running the parade.
What did he say? We should find the exact quote, actually. Can you find that, Phil, while I rant about this more? Do you know where to find it?
Yeah, I can look for it.
All right. So he posted that, and the world went ballistic. You know, the world loves their first responders.
Well, here's the thing that upsets me. I think it was one of his family members that actually sent the message to, or at least a friend that sent the message to the first responders that were threatening him.
It was one of his, Jeremy's family members?
Yeah, either a family member or a friend, somebody that, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
I may be wrong, hopefully.
I know there's members of his family that are not happy about it, but let's just talk about the public aspect of what happened. So, because I don't know if he wants, you know, that kind of stuff out. So the public part of what happened was that people went ballistic about it. It kind of went mini-viral, like, you know. There ended up being like 2,500 posts, 2,500 comments on his post. Half of them, you know, families, friends, and first responders and first responders screeching. I don't even like that word, first responders. Firemen, because the first responder isn't always a government agent. So it was, you know, firemen and policemen and the families and those who love them screaming at him. And then, like, all of Jeremy's friends and fans screaming back, which leads to the title of tonight's show. Tonight's show is called One Echo Chamber Colliding with Another Echo Chamber, which is really what that does. And I don't really see a lot of point in screaming at status. I don't do it. Like, I've gotten no fallout from this. There's other fiends who've gotten threats because, you know, because they've like argued with these people. And I just stay out of it. First of all, I told Jeremy as soon as I heard that he said that he shouldn't have done that, and Phil pretty much agreed, or that it was like, wow, you really said that? Man, I can't believe it. And then something weirder happened, which was that a reporter went over to his house with a camera and stuck in his face on his property, like way back by his garage, and asked him for a quote, and he said something like, get off my property. She said, well, no, I really want a quote. He said, get off my property. She said, again, you know, I need a statement. And he said, here's your statement, and pulled a gun out of a sheath. I mean, a knife out of a gun. A knife out of it. That's like, who carries a knife? Other than every male in Wyoming. But, a knife on a sheath and like, held it in the air. Not pointing it at her, but, I mean, that would be called brandishing, but... I wouldn't have done that either. I thought that was ridiculous. But
did he have his finger on the trigger of the knife?
It was an assault knife.
I would specifically say that, you know, when you've spent the last 3 days getting death threats from cops and firemen, you're not exactly thinking tactics at that point. At least I wouldn't be.
That's the problem. I think I kind of think they set him up. I wouldn't be surprised if the cops sent the reporter over there. But, you know, they don't have to because three-letter ABC, NBC, CBS, that kind of people, ostensibly they are agents of the state. And I know that because Nima Vedati, who founded this show with me, used to be an ABC news anchor, reporter, talking head and reporter. And that's it. I mean, you have to toe the line. You have to make the police look good or you never get any inside information, you know, quick information. You're behind everyone else if the police don't like you. So so she, being the classy bee that she, unclassy bee that she is, she, or whoever edited it, edited out the two times of him telling her to leave. So the edit was just, you know, do you have a statement? And he pulled out a knife and said, this is my statement. So they made him look like a crazy person. But he kind of fell into their trap, too. Now, I want to put in a little... Lou, walk off the mic. Lean off the mic to chew, man. It's, I hear it all. It's not good radio. I want to do a little pitch here for what would have made him have a lot better case in all this is Cell 411. If he had been running Cell 411... You know, he would be broadcasting that video to his friends and to the Cell 411 servers to hold on to it. So there'd be no way for her lie to live. You know, like now it's just her word against his. I believe him because I know him and I know how the news is. But that was pretty sleazy to do that. But, you know, who's going to believe that without footage? So if he had Cell 411'd it, and I would encourage everyone to get Cell 411 and not only get it, but practice with it. Because we found this out, because Jeremy has Cell 411. First of all, his phone was inside charging. Second of all, if I was in a situation like that, I wouldn't leave my house without a phone charged and Cell 411.
He was in his garage.
He was in his garage, but that's still, you know, I don't know. When you're getting death threats, I wouldn't be outside my house without Cell 411. But I taught him how to use it today, and he knows how to use it, and he's ready. And Virgil from Cell 411 is sending him a free Cell 411 panic button so he can use it even quicker.
Awesome.
And he's getting a body harness. So, worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Yeah. So the name of the show is One Echo Chamber Colliding with Another. And that not only describes the system, the situation with Jeremy and the status, Jeremy versus the tri-state area, it also describes pretty much America and the world right now. Facebook, the Battle of Berkeley, most of America, the world. I guess it's a growing pain of the internet because it used to be, you know, I heard that burp. It used to be that if you wanted to, get the word out and you were a nobody like us with, you know, no resources, you know, you couldn't even start a podcast. You couldn't go on Facebook. We're not nobodies. We have a radio show, but, you know.
It was Carrier Pigeon.
Yeah, Carrier Pigeon. I mean, I remember, and the thing is, too, like, one of the things it has done is raise the volume of the screeching to the point where, like, I remember like 10 years ago, like right before I moved to Wyoming, like this thing had happened in Wyoming that people were still talking about that I heard about when I got here. And it was that some Libertarian Party member had written a letter to a local newspaper and it had gotten published. And it was pretty mild, you know, but it was kind of like the Constitution licking version of you know, temptation is theft, and if they keep this up, somebody might do something about it, you know. But it wasn't any like scarier than that. And the like some federal agents like came to his house and talked to him about it to make sure he wasn't going to do anything horrible. And it's like, I mean, the average Facebook post has like 50 or 60 comments, far worse than that right now, and nothing ever happens. You know, occasionally one gets plucked out of the pile and they put some, you know, Marine vet in a mental hospital for 3 weeks till a lawyer gets them out. But, you know, pretty much anybody can say anything they want now. I mean, I've personally seen dozens of posts of people threatening violence on this president and the last president. I never saw it much before that. But, you know, people could just say whatever they want. And to threaten some, it's ironic too, threatening someone's life for free speech. I mean, it was really unpleasant free speech, but it's still free speech. And the people threatening his life, like a fireman threatened to burn down his house. And the people that are supposed to be protecting you are like, it just, Phil said it well, it just shows they're a gang, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was away this weekend, so I missed pretty much all of it.
All of this, yeah.
I mean, I got back Monday night, I'm like, what the heck's going on? Because I saw some links on Facebeast, and it's like, whoa, that went out, that escalated.
Yep.
I don't agree with his post. I think that the wording was very horrible, insensitive, and definitely would not.
Go ahead.
I definitely would not have made that post myself. And he's not celebrating the death of a fireman or anything that. I don't celebrate the death of anybody. Back in my status days, I remember when Bin Laden got, Saddam Hussein got caught. Maybe Bin Laden too. Back then I would high five and like, yeah, that mother bleeper's dead. Yeah. I don't even do that anymore.
Yeah.
So when I hear about some thug that, you know, he's a mugger or something like that, you know, just some real jerkwad drain on society. When I hear about them getting gunned down, I don't celebrate. When I hear about cops getting killed doing a no-knock raid, I don't celebrate. I just don't celebrate death. I think that's, I don't know.
Well, he wasn't either, and he made that clear. He did an interview. Someone, you know, instead of coming on his property, someone actually just called him on the phone from some magazine. He did an interview or a newspaper, and you know, they printed what he said, which he does not celebrate, you know, the guy's death. I don't know. Anyway, there's a fundraiser. Go ahead.
One of my really, really big problems with this is that his kids are the targets of this ire, and they're hoping kids. There's people hoping that his kids die. I seriously,
crazy.
What kind of animal thinks that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Even the firemen are even threatening his kids. Like he had one of the firemen not just threaten arson on his house, but threaten it when his kids were home, and people, yeah.
And he got blocked off Facebook for 3 days because, for his own safety, he posted that post and did not censor the guy's name so people could copy it and have it. Like, you know, if my house burns down, look at this guy. Although, who would he even go to, man? You know? I mean, like, the cops? I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. When he pulled the knife out, and he did not pull the knife on the reporter. He pulled it and pointed it.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Michael back?
I don't believe so.
Michael, are you there?
Yeah.
Ah, he is there.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Michael.
Yeah.
So, what were you saying before we got clock blocked going into the break,
Phil?
Well, I was just talking about the when the reporter was there after having asked her multiple times to leave. What he did was he took the knife and he pointed it in the air, and people were saying that he was chasing her with a knife, which is completely insane. That's not even on the video. Even if you watch the video, nobody in their right mind thinks he was chasing her with a knife. But that's the rant that I was going on.
Who says that? Who thinks that? Where'd you hear that?
Comments on the news report and comments on his Facebook
post. Well, it's like, you know, the game telephone when you're a kid. I don't know if, you know, anybody listening to the radio know what telephone is. Telephone's when you... It's kind of describe telephone, Phil. You probably know. It's like an experiment in gossip.
Yeah. So you put all of your kindergartners in a big circle, and you tell one kindergartner some story, some short story, and you have them tell the person to their left, and then they tell that story to the person to their left, and it keeps going around the circle until it gets to the original person. And they find out, they see how the story has morphed from the original story into a completely different thing.
Yep. A really fun variation of that is to
Facebook.
Put something through one after another of English, of language translators, of text translators.
Now, oh, gosh.
It's probably a lot better than it used to be, because that has all gotten a lot better.
Is.
But I did that in, like, 1998 with some of the first ones, and it turned into, like, sheer poetry after three languages. you know what's ironic to me about these people threatening Jeremy? I would be willing
and
to
his children.
And his children. That a lot of the people threatening Jeremy... You know, if a reporter showed up on their porch and started to bother them about something they didn't want to talk about and kept pressing them on it, I'll bet a lot of those people would, you know, if they were, well, they're in New York, so they can't legally carry a weapon. But, you know, if they were somewhere that you can legally carry a weapon, I'll bet they'd be thinking about showing it to the person, if not showing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of the people that were saying, oh, he should have called the cops if she wasn't leaving. You mean the cops that have been threatened?
Yeah.
I mean, really?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's insane.
Yeah,
so anyway,
it is completely insane.
There was a fundraiser, but of course the state has got it taken down from GoFundMe, but they got another one taken down from some other thing where it actually probably did violate the terms of service, because you can't raise money for legal funds on that. And then they tried to make it for his children because he has lost work over this. But so they made another one on GoFundMe at my suggestion, and I said that they'll probably get it taken down, but you can get it reinstated on GoFundMe, because the way that GoFundMe works, and a lot of things like Facebook. And Facebook gave Jeremy a 3-day timeout for reposting that picture of the guy saying...
Screenshot
of the guy saying that he would, you know, burn the family and the house to death. But Facebook didn't take that post down. It's still up.
I wonder if they took down the girl that doxxed him to begin with, if they ever gave her a 3-day suspension or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Although it really doxxed himself. His home address and phone number was on his website, which I actually warned him about when I first looked at his website, like 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, to change that. But yeah. There is a Bitcoin fundraiser. The other one's going to be back up in a day, because that's one of those sites, you know, like Facebook, that if 10 or 20 people complain, they take something down, whether or not it violates the terms of service. But they can get it back. So the people who put it up for him are putting it back. There's also a Bitcoin address. I'm going to put the Bitcoin address in the show notes tonight. And if you can, you know, send a little money to Jeremy, it'd really help him, because he's... You know, legal expenses, lost work, you know, wants to leave town. He's been trying to leave town for months now anyway. You know, it's not like they're chasing him out of town. But I told him he should call his fundraiser a leave-in. It's called, they did this. They called it a leave-in town fund, because I said that maybe even some of the statists that hate him would chip into that.
Yeah. Well, the ironic thing is the legal issues are probably going to keep him in town longer than he originally intended.
They do that. They own you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Escape from New York. That should be a movie.
Can't do it.
Title.
Yeah. So that's that. Did you find the original post, Phil?
Yeah, I've got it in front of me. Here's what he said. He said, stuck in traffic for over an hour with no escape options, all because some agent of the state died. Feinsteining parasites, ..
F-ing parasites, yeah. Yeah, I think he was actually talking about the people in front of him that were blocking traffic, not the guy who died.
He was talking about all of the firemen and the NYPD in the procession that basically shut the town down in order to do a funeral, and we're being paid tax dollars to do it. If you go to a funeral,
traffic for an hour or two.
They
get paid to go to funerals. Of course they do.
Yeah. If you go to a funeral, you have to take a day off, probably take a dock and pay, or if not, at least take a sick day. But they were getting paid to, like, full duty pay to do this procession.
It's ridiculous.
And that's what he was complaining about.
Yeah, I want to make it clear, I kind of mashed a couple topics together. Jeremy is not kicked off the show. I was talking about people that were gone from the show. Jeremy is definitely not gone from the Fiends, but he also won't be on for a while because the Fiends legal counsel has suggested to him that it's probably a good idea not to talk about this in any public forums until it's finalized by the state. I think that's good advice. But so yeah, try to give him some money if you can. Be a good thing. You know, Facebook is planning to add 3,000 workers to catch and remove streaming violence mainly because of that thing that happened the other day with the guy walking up to somebody and shooting him on streaming video. But I would be willing to bet that also, you know, there was another one before that too where somebody filmed her boyfriend being shot by a cop. I'd be willing to bet that they're going to not let you stream that anymore. You know, like your witness photography. You know, when something's happening to you or a loved one or some stranger, that the state is doing violence to somebody for no reason. I think that Facebook is probably going to stop that as soon as it happens. So another reason to get Cell 411 and do a practice test. Practice it, test it, and like, you know, get it. Send out an alert and some video and mark it, you know, just test and see if everyone gets it and if it works. Because that's something I'm finding is a lot of people have that app and it's not terribly hard to use. It's a pretty easy to use app, but it doesn't run itself. It's an app, you know, it's a program. It's got an interface. So if you think you can just have it and just pull it out and you're going to be able to figure it out while the cop's hitting you with the billy club, you're wrong. You know, try using it.
And Siri probably won't run it for you.
Siri, yeah. Yep. Cell 411. It's free for phones. The two main phones. Android phone. Cell 411 phone. What's the other one? iPhone. The one no one uses? Yeah, iPhone.
The what? Right.
I'm kidding.
I what?
The I what? Yeah.
What is this thing you speak of?
Oh, I don't know.
Will it run my AOL on it?
Hey, did you hear about the Pope warning about an invasion of libertarians?
No.
Yeah.
I was gone all weekend. I have absolutely no idea what's going on. This is last week, though.
This is kind of a little.
I'm also slow on news stories.
Yeah, yeah. The Pope, like in some speech somewhere, talked about how. You know, libertarians were horrible and they weren't of God because they were selfish. And basically the Pope has turned into like a big fat communist. He really is. He really wants to take everyone's wealth and redistribute it.
Oh, that Pope always has been a big fat communist.
Yeah.
He's been a big fat communist from the beginning.
There's a meme about him too. It says, it has a picture of him. It says, warns about an invasion of libertarians, but lives in a tax-free compound full of gold and guns, promoting charity and world peace.
Oh, okay. I did see that meme.
Yeah, that's what that was about.
Yeah, if it's a meme, I'm up on it. If it's a news story, not so much.
That's how you get your news now. Memes.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's funny.
Memes.
I get my news from memes.
As I've said a million times before, memes are the digital bumper stickers traveling up and down the information superhighway.
They sure are. Hey, we got
the truth.
The Fiends have a Roku channel now. You guys have Roku? You know what Roku is?
No.
Can you run your AOL on it?
Roku is, I thought it was really cheesy till I heard about it. Well, I thought it was cheesy when it was a set-top box, but when they made it a big USB kind of stick that just sticks in the back of a TV, and then it has a remote, and basically, like, you can have TV without having a TV set. Like, if you have internet, you can just get a flat-screen TV and stick a Roku stick into it, and they're like $50, and then you can control... You know, there's a bunch of free channels that you can get with your Wi-Fi, but you can also add, you know, like you can watch your Netflix through it without a computer in the room. You can watch your Amazon Prime through it. You can watch your YouTube Red through it. You know, any number of things like that. You can watch HBO through it if you have HBO. It's really cool, and you can also do audio-only channels. So there is a Freedom Fiends audio only channel on there, and the code to add it is Fiends. Is it Fiends or Fiend? I'll look it up. And there's also one for cussfreeliberty.com or .org, which is the cuss free, like LRN, but without all the smut. And that's no cuss is the code, NOCUSS. So check them out, people. Rate and review. So what do you guys got? I'm gonna leave in 1 minute when the break comes. So if you guys want to pimp something that's coming up in the next hour, next segment.
I wasn't even expecting you to be here this long, but anyway. So
what do you say? I overstayed my welcome on your show, Lou?
No, you surprised me because
I'm kidding, man.
Because you said you were really sick.
Yeah,
but it's kind of like when I get sick or when I'm really beat down, I say, all right, I'm going to hang back. And then 2 beers later, it's like, rawr!
Yeah.
Yeah, I dominate the whole show.
I just need a microphone. That is my beer. All right. Have a good show, kids. Love you. Worms.
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 You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat? No.
We are back on the Freedom Fiends. And I have an article from The Onion, from The New York Times. Woman who laughed during Jeff Sessions' confirmation convicted faces year in prison. 3 women, including one who said her only crime was laughing, were convicted Wednesday on charges of disrupting the confirmation hearing of U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The women were part of activist group Code Pink and were protesting Sessions' January 10th Senate confirmation hearing. 2 of the women, Ty Berry and Lenny Bianchi, appeared at the Washington, D.C. hearing dressed as Ku Klux Klan members. They were acquitted on account of disorderly conduct, but convicted on 2 separate charges of parading or demonstrating. A 3rd woman, Desiree Feruz of Virginia, was found guilty of disorderly conduct and parading or demonstrating on Capitol grounds. Each faces up to 12 months in prison.
Now, free speech and demonstration, isn't that something that's supposed to be an American value? Isn't that something that's supposed to be guaranteed under the Constitution?
What are you talking about? Where are you from? free speech.
Well, I want to read from a constitution here. Citizens are guaranteed freedom of speech, the press, assembly, demonstration, and association. The state shall guarantee the conditions for the free activities of democratic political parties and social organizations. That by the way, is Article 67, Chapter 5 of the North Korean Constitution.
Yep.
Freedom of speech, the press, assembly, and demonstration and association. Those rights are guaranteed under the North Korean Constitution. By the way, Article 68, the following one is, citizens have a freedom of religious belief. This right is granted through the approval of the construction of religious buildings and the holding of religious ceremonies. Religion must not be used as a pretext for drawing in foreign forces or for harming the state or social order.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we see how well the government, how much we can trust the government to protect our rights, don't we?
Yes, yes. So anyway, yeah, going back to the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, the First Amendment guarantees freedoms concerning religion, the actual amendment that was that's the interpretation from cornell.edu. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people to peaceably or of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now, didn't you say that they were, what were they acquitted of, disturbing the peace or?
Disorderly conduct.
Okay.
Yeah, so, they were convicted of parading or demonstrating.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure that that kind of falls under the First Amendment.
Yeah,
but
I'm pretty sure that maybe I'm incorrectly remembering, but wasn't demonstration like in there somewhere?
No, actually, they're better protected under Chapter 5, Article 67 of the North Korean Constitution.
Oh yeah, that's where I heard it.
Yeah, that's where you have the right to assemble and demonstrate.
Yeah, maybe they should have protested in North Korea instead. I'm sure they would have treated them, you know, just as well.
Exactly like they're treated here.
Right, yeah. I wanted to say, you know, but yeah, pretty much the same.
So, apparently they had the same show trial that they would have gotten in North Korea, and, you know, this whole thing of constitutionally protected rights in a government that abides by the restraints of the Constitution, LOL.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not like this has ever happened historically, like, you know, say under John Adams or anything like that.
Oh, God. One of my least favorite fondling fathers. He's up there with Hamilton. Except Hamilton was intentionally the way he was. I think Adams was more naive. But anyway, we'll be back second hour, and we're going to be talking about some history, liberty, and economic stuff. Yay! Worms.
Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Purse.io is a great website where you can spend Bitcoin on Amazon or trade Amazon gift cards for Bitcoin. I use Purse myself and I love it. You can also get discounts on Amazon. You can get 5% right this minute, or if you place your order and wait a day or so, you can name your discount and get 10%, 20%, even up to 33% off. You can try Purse right now and get 0.01 Bitcoin free after you complete your first order over $50. And if you go through the Freedom Fiends link, Purse will also send 0.01 Bitcoin to the Freedom Fiends. Help yourself to some agorism and help Liberty Media while you're at it. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Purse link, even if you've used Purse before. or enter the referral code FIENDS when you sign up at purse.io. That's FIENDS. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. Do it.
The Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza on the artificial satellite Lib Pair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And welcome back. I'm Lou, joined by Phil, and Michael Dean has gone to his little oxygen chamber, and the helmet has been removed, and now he's like rejuvenating, waiting for the Emperor to come and call upon him again.
Worms. See, one of those white clean rooms like you see on that Monk TV show, where he just kind of breathes nicely, so pleasantly.
Monk? No, I'm thinking more like Darth Vader.
Ah, or that. Okay.
Well, with the, when he's using the oxygen, you hear the. Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah, that sounds exactly like it. So anyway, what we're going to be talking about, and this is some stuff that I wanted to cover for a while. This is kind of like a good news, old news, but good news stuff. Talking about how people have actually accomplished things on their own, and it talks about people who are of accomplishment. So we're going to talk about Marshall Field tonight, but there's also like a handful of people that we're going to talk about. And the first article that we're going to talk about is called "The Truth About the Robber Barons," and Robber Barons is in parentheses. This was written by Thomas DiLorenzo from the Mises Institute, and this is, I believe it's an excerpt. Yeah, it's an excerpt from Chapter 7 of his book, How Capitalism Saved America. And Burton Folsom of Hillsdale College also had a book called The Myth of the Robber Barons, I believe it was, where it talked about a lot of the same stuff here. And I guess one of the reasons I go into it is there's have you ever seen that episode of, was it South Park, where they got the underpants gnomes?
If I did, it was a long time ago.
Okay. So anyway, one of the side stories in South Park, and once you get away from the poor artistic quality and the potty mouthness, there's actually some really good learning lessons in that show. So they hide it pretty well. But anyway, one of the side stories in the Underpants Gnomes is you got these little garden gnomes, and they keep coming to life and breaking into the house of the kid whose family owns the coffee shop. I believe his name was Tweak, because he was always buzzing around on coffee. So anyway, they keep breaking into his house, going into his bedroom, and stealing underwear out of his dresser drawers. And nobody sees this except for the kid, Tweak. So he's like, dude, the gnomes are stealing my underwear. They're stealing my underwear. And everybody's like, yeah, whatever. And then towards the end of the episode, the rest of the boys see the gnomes going and stealing the underwear. So they follow this gnome back to the gnome lair, and there's this big pile of underwear. And they're like, you know, what the heck are you guys doing? You know, why are you stealing underpants? And they're like, well, we got a business plan. We steal underpants, and that turns into giant profits. And they keep asking how, and the gnomes keep saying, well, you steal underpants, you get giant profits. And it goes into an economics lesson called Thinking Beyond Stage 1, or Phase 1, whichever you choose to go with. And if you could imagine this visual, number one, a list of 1 through 3. Number 1 says steal underpants. Number 3 says giant profits. And then number 2 has question marks. So what exactly is it in stage 2 that turns stealing underpants into giant profits? And the boys can't explain this. Now, anybody that's owned a business knows that you have to do an awful lot of things to make that business successful. And the only business I've really run, it was when I was a teenager, or of my own, rather, was doing yard work, cutting grass, shoveling snow, raking leaves, things like that. So it wasn't really a whole complicated thing, because I didn't have to worry about advertising and meeting payroll and budgets and all that other stuff. But there were certain things I had to, I had to make sure that I was charging enough to compensate myself properly, but not so much to where some other kid from the neighborhood could come in and take my customers away from me. But anyway, so what exactly is it that creates profits? And that's the thing that the gnomes can't explain. And quite frankly, a lot of people out there, particularly if they've never run a business, whether it was their own or somebody else's, they can't explain it either. It's really amazing how many people have this idea that you open a business and then all of a sudden guys in dark suits show up wearing sunglasses with briefcases full of money and just hand it to the owners.
Yeah, this is a little somewhat extra apropos today, since it's May 3rd, and 2 days ago was May Day, where all the communists ran out and stormed the streets and protested for, against all of the greedy capitalists who must just have that step one, have money, step three, make money, because that's apparently how they do it. That seems to be the idea that is in so many people of how business owners actually become wealthy. Step one, have money. Step three, make money. And that's all they can really comprehend. They don't actually bother to look into what these people are doing to really make their wealth, the perseverance and the hard work that goes into it, and the ridiculous number of variables that you have to account for in order to make your fortune. And the amount of absolute benefit that you have to provide to other people in order for you to make a successful living.
Exactly. In his book, The State, Franz Oppenheimer divides the ways of making money into two different methods. One is using the economic means, which is to provide goods and services to your customers, get their appreciation, get them to purchase your products again down the road, or get them to purchase your products in the first place because they want to. So it's a voluntary transaction. People are choosing to be consumers of a particular business, and they're choosing to go back of their own free will. There's absolutely no coercion involved in it, and that is the economic means, satisfying your customers. The other way is the political means, which would be using legislation to restrict the capabilities of your competition or outright eliminate your competition through creating new regulations, licensing requirements, putting up barriers to entry, or even requiring people to purchase your product. One of the big things people talked about with Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, or the Unaffordable Care Act, as it turned out, they were like, oh my God, these insurance companies, they lobbied to make buying insurance mandatory. Well, no kidding. What better way to insure a living than to have people required to buy your product? In New Hampshire, there's no requirement to purchase car insurance. You don't have to have liability, basic liability insurance to be on the road. Now, if you purchase a new vehicle or if you finance a vehicle, your loan company, whoever's doing the financing, will most likely require you to purchase insurance because of the risk of loss to them. But there's no general law that says that you have to have car insurance. They have some of the lowest car insurance rates in the country, if not the lowest. And last I heard, they have about 95% insured rate, which is higher than most of the states where it's mandatory.
That's pretty funny.
So the economic means of work or the political means of robbery.
Absolutely.
That's the only way to explain it.
And even if you go into the finance sector issue, so a lot of people like to complain, well, all of these people are making money off of just having money because they're playing the finance game and doing speculation and whatnot. Well, all that is allocating resources where they're necessary and making money off of providing that time value preference or that time preference for people who need money right now to invest in maybe making their own business. So it's no different than savings. You put your money in your bank to save it and you get a certain amount of interest on that. Well, the finance sector is really just a more higher risk version of saving, where they're investing this money in allocating it to where it needs to go, where maybe they invest it in, maybe you have angel investors that invest in a new company idea or something like in the tech sector, you have the term is kind of blanking on me right now, but you have all it is essentially, buying stocks. When you're buying stocks, you're providing money for investment into a company so that they can provide value to their customers so they can invest in the products that they're putting together in order to provide benefit to other people. So even if you're working in the finance sector, you're still providing value. Even if you're doing it just making money off of your money, you're doing so by providing value to somebody else.
Yeah. So I mean, with stock, you're getting an ownership position in a company. If you're purchasing bonds, and there are corporate bonds out there, it's not just municipal or government bonds. In that particular case, you're giving a company a loan. So they're getting capital investments so that they can do new products or upgrades or, just different things to improve their business, to become more competitive and bring more goods to market.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So and that's really all it is. I mean, you are providing, and that's the deal with time preference of money. You are getting interest because you are giving them money that they need right now that you may not necessarily need right now. And in return, they are giving you a little bit extra on top of that when you get it back because you've provided them a service that they need in the immediacy.
And we'll be right back after this trip to the market.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
So this hour, we are going to be talking about the people that have made things happen. And a lot of them have been unfairly maligned because of their success. I'm going to start off with a quote from Murray Rothbard. Free market capitalism is a network of free and voluntary exchanges in which the producers produce and exchange their products for the products of others through prices voluntarily arrived at. I can't speak tonight. State capitalism consists of one or more groups making use of the coercive apparatus of the government for themselves by expropriating the production of others by force and violence. And that's from Murray Rothbard, The Logic of Action, 1997.
I would have expected Murray Rothbard to have avoided such a blatant ending of a sentence with a preposition. But beyond that, this is a great cinema. It's a great quote.
Oh gosh, shame on Murray. But anyway, so the article starts off the late 19th and early 20th century are often referred to as the time of the robber barons. It is a staple of history books to attach this derogatory phrase to such figures as John D. Rockefeller, Cornelius Vanderbilt, and the great 19th century railroad operators, Grenville Dodge, Leland Stanford, Henry Villard, James J. Hill, and others. To most historians writing on this period, these entrepreneurs committed thinly veiled acts of larceny to enrich themselves at the expense of their customers. Once again, we see the image of this greedy, exploitative capitalist, but in many cases, this is a distortion of the truth. Just insert the image of the guy from the Monopoly game into your mind as we're going through this.
Yeah, and that's one. And what does exploitative mean? What do they define that as?
Usually, it's taking advantage of somebody, and unfortunately, there's this idea in business that anybody that makes money has done it through exploitation of somebody else. So it's like they can't imagine a world where somebody becomes successful by pleasing their customers. And what's really amazing is these people that will yell about a CEO of an oil company. And granted, the oil companies, they got some shady stuff going on. They're definitely in bed with governments. But they see somebody who produces something like oil or any other type of product, automobiles, electronic devices, they see the profitability of that as being horrible. But when somebody like Beyonce, who's a very talented singer and songwriter and everything else, and her stuff's pretty good.
Talented singer, not a talented songwriter.
Well, and her and the 12 other people that it takes to write a song for her. But anyway, she's very good at what she does. She's a very talented performer. And yes, if she makes a lot of money, they will point out, well, people chose to buy her CDs and you know, they threw their money at her. You know, she's great. She's awesome. But somebody who provides other types of goods and services is obviously somebody that's absolutely horrible. I don't know if it's because they consider these other things, these other goods and services to be rights or necessities and music to be a luxury, but I really don't get this.
Well, that makes sense. It's okay to make ridiculous amounts of money providing something that people don't need, but if you're providing something people do need, how dare you make any sort of money on that or any sort of profit? That is exploitation.
Yeah. Well, it also they're also under the false impression that not creating profit is going to create a lower price.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah, which is completely idiotic. You know, this is the one of the reasons why I pointed out the exploitation thing is there's this idea that communists have that they completely don't understand the idea of subjective value. And of course it makes sense because they have this whole labor theory of value.
Period.
Yeah, or value, period. Yeah.
Or and any other economic terms.
Right, exactly. Yeah, one of the things that annoys me to no end is how people call Karl Marx an economist. It just bugs me so much. But I'll complain more about that after the break.
Yes, meow.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself. A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon. Your house is your property.
And we're back for the Freedom Fiends. Before the break, we were speaking about this concept of exploitation, and I just feel the need to go into a little rant about this, because it's one of those things that you hear constantly from communists, who I run into more often than I would like in the area where I live. But there's a video that I caught circling around online not too long ago from this Marxist economics professor. This guy's got a PhD in economics, and anybody who understands anything about economics would wonder how in the world he got a PhD in economics, because in this video he talks about this. He talks about the concept of working for the man, you know, working for an employer. And when you work for an employer, you are by definition, and this is in his words, being screwed, because you're not getting all of the money. You're only getting some of the money, and the rest of that, or the excess value, is going to the employer. And of course, the only way this can make sense is under the labor theory of value, which is immediately debunked just as soon as you dig a hole and then fill it back up again, or as soon as you say, well, okay, why are those guys using plows when they could be using shovels? More labor, more value. Oh, and even more, go to spoons. That's even more labor. If they dig with spoons, more labor, more value, right? Well, no. That's because the labor theory of value is nonsense. But another thing on that. So the guy has no concept of subjective value, which means, well, in the positions that these people are, the employer value the worker values his job, values the money that he gets from his job more than he values the work. So he is getting positive value for what he is putting in. On top of that, the whole means of production issue. This is why communists want to seize the means of production, because the workers' value is not the only value that is going in to what they're producing. The means of production, i.e. the tools that they are using, which are provided by his employer, is also going in to what he's producing. Here's another one. Prior work, the work that established the business, that established the means of production to begin with, that prior work was done by, guess who? The employer. And all this shows is that communists have no concept of delayed gratification, because that's what it is. The employer has put in an overwhelming amount of work at the beginning to establish this business, to establish this firm that provides value and provides employment to the people that are working for him, and for a long time not getting his return on that work. And now, with more employers and getting the excess value off of the paycheck that the employee is receiving, that is the return on the investment of all of that prior work, all of the hard work that the employer has been doing from the get-go. And communists just do not understand this. It's like right over their heads.
Yeah, I recently had a discussion about this on FaceBeast, and the thing about it is the communists are always talking about seizing the means of production, and now there are people out there that claim to be market socialists, and they talk about worker-owned co-ops and stuff like this, and they're not the ones that are talking about seizing the means of production. And it was really funny because the post I put out there was basically asking, how do these worker co-ops happen? So what happens in stage two for somebody to say, hey, I'm going to open a business, to the business is running and is completely profitable. So if somebody wants to open a machine shop, where does the building come from? Where do the machines come from? Where do all the tools that they use? Where does the money to pay the employees before the first product has been sold come from? And this just completely baffles them. So I asked, what's the origin story of this? Now, how do you do this without a capital investment? How do you get a workers' co-op of, 50 people or whatever to create this stuff without them having a capital investment? What happens when new people apply for the position? Do they apply for an owner position and they get an ownership stake in the company, or do they buy in? How does this happen? And outside of seizing the means of production, I've met many socialists that have said, well, yeah, we're going to take the stuff and we're going to kill the bourgeois exploiters. If they leave peacefully, we'll let them leave, but we don't expect them to just let us take their stuff. I've actually met the people that talk about killing people. So I asked for an origin story other than seizing the means of production. Give me something. Even if it's Karl Marx removing a rib, planting it in the ground in a factory rising up for the proletariat, something. Give me something other than we're going to rob these people.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If Karl Marx, put a rib in the, he would have stolen somebody else's rib to do it with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, the man who talked about the plight of the workers never really did a day of hard labor in his life.
Oh, absolutely. That guy was a lazy, and he spent his entire life exploiting people. That's all he did with his life. folks.
Yeah, and he mooshed off of his family, his wife's family, Engels, everybody.
Yeah, he was the typical communist, just mooching off of a successful businessman, or at least a successful heir to businessmen.
Yeah, and I believe he also knocked up his housekeeper, talking about effing the working class.
Right.
Absolutely. Knocked up the housekeeper and then refused to take responsibility for it. But anyway, the only good thing about Karl Marx is he was not a Keynesian. And that's from Murray Rothbard. But anyway, let's get off of lazy scumbags and start talking about somebody who's actually accomplished something. First one that I want to talk about is James J. Hill. And in this article, is from the section called How to Build a Railroad. Starts off, most business historians have assumed that the transcontinental railroads would have never been built without government subsidies. The free market would have failed to provide the adequate capital, or so the theory asserts. The evidence for this theory is that Union Pacific and Central Pacific railroads, which were completed in the years after the war between the states, received per-mile subsidies from the federal government in the form of low-interest loans as well as massive land grants, but there were not to be cause and effect here. The subsidies were not needed to cause the transcontinental railroads to be built. We know this because just as many roads and canals were privately financed in the early 19th century, a market entrepreneur built his own transcontinental railroad. James J. Hill built the Great Northern Railroad without any government aid, even the right of way, through hundreds of miles of public lands being paid for in cash, as Hill himself stated. Quite naturally, Hill strongly opposed government favors to his competitors. The government should not furnish capital to these companies. In addition to their enormous land subsidies to enable them to conduct their business in competition with enterprises that have received no aid from the public treasury, he wrote. This may sound quaint by today's standards, but it was still a highly debated issue in the late 19th century. I'm having trouble reading this stuff, so I'm just going to go from memory because I've studied this pretty hard. He was born pretty much dead broke in poverty. But everybody in the 19th century was impoverished because no matter how much money you had, you really couldn't do a whole lot with it. But he grew up dirt poor. His father had died when he was 14, so he didn't really have much of a education, dropped out of school to help take care of the family. It says here that he was working in a grocery store for $4 a month to help support his widowed mother. And as a young adult, he worked in the farming, shipping, steamship industries, did all sorts of things, and he learned business in these particular settings. So he saved up some money and eventually became an investor and manager of his own enterprises. And he had got into railroad business with a few partners, and he had purchased a bankrupted railroad. And this is one of the subsidized ones. So this guy comes from nothing. He's not born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He born with a plastic spoon. Dirt poor. But by working and saving up some money, he is able to purchase a bankrupted railroad company. And this wound up eventually being the Great Northern Railroad. Says here, okay, yeah, he purchased the government subsidized Northern Pacific Railroad. And when he was getting rights of way, he was purchasing rights of way and negotiating with the Indians rather than using his political connections to have the military go in and murder the Indians and take the land. He was negotiating with them, and he was keeping his agreements with them, unlike the government was doing, because the government would make treaties with Indians and say, okay, you can live out here, nobody's gonna mess with you, and then they come back a little bit later, we changed our mind, you're gonna need to move or we're gonna kill you. So what he was doing was he was negotiating, and then also he was building towns along the route. So if there was a lot of lumber and stuff going on there, he would run his train routes through there, and towns would grow up, logging towns, and they would be running these lumber industries and putting stuff on his trains to get it out there. So he wasn't in the typical dig a ditch, fill a ditch fashion where they say, oh, hey, let's build this town for logging out in the desert. He was actually being smart about it because he was using his own money. He wasn't using the subsidies and the land grants. Now, something else, because a lot of these subsidized railroads were getting paid by the mile, as I mentioned, they were making these rail lines that were twisting and turning and curving and everything else, and they looked like an amusement park ride. Because Hill had to pay on his own to lay track, his tracks were laid straight. The subsidized companies got additional money for going through swamps and wetlands and less desirable locations, and also for steep grades. Well, they didn't miss a single swamp. Hill avoided the swamps and the steep grades. And we'll be back after this trip to the market.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Saving the universe! Freedom Fiends! Doing the things that I've
taking the world from the state, fighting the forces of hate!
Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Kicking the hornet's nest! Freedom Fiends! Doing the things that I've
taken! Keeping the tasers away! The truth today, yeah, we will not force you to stop in the cops on the block, for the fiends on the block. Ain't never gonna stop in the glass, go plow.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back. You were doing the Google thing, and what was it that you found out about the Great Northern Railroad?
Well, so as I expected, the Great Northern Railroad includes the main railway line that goes essentially from Canada, but crosses around Seattle, goes down into Tacoma and Olympia, and ultimately down in Portland. So some of the biggest pushers of this kind of narrative, this kind of robber baron narrative, are these people out here. This is probably the Seattle and Portland are probably the biggest concentrations of communist and communist sympathizers in America. So I'm just not surprised that some of the biggest, and of course it also goes through like Chicago and Wisconsin and Minnesota, where there are also huge union sympathies and union support. But it just goes to show it's a whole lot easier to steal from people if you call them the thieves. Then people maybe don't get as mad at you about it.
Yep. So anyway, one of the interesting things is Hill was the first person to cross the Rocky Mountains with his railroad. And what he did, and his business plan was always about doing the shortest, most direct routes, avoiding the costly things. So as I mentioned in the last segment, the subsidized railroads were getting additional monies for going through bad area, a difficult area to work, so swamps, wetlands, or as we call it now, Washington, D.C. they were getting paid for going through steeper grades, so they didn't miss a hill, they didn't miss a swamp, they got all this stuff. As a matter of fact, they would do a lousy job because they knew if their tracks got messed up over the winter time, they're going to get paid in the spring to repair them. So that was a constant influx of money coming in. So because Hill had to pay out of his own pocket, he made straight lines and he avoided the difficult territory, and he was able to be more profitable. Along with all the strings that are attached, or along with all the government grants of money and land and everything else, there were strings attached, which actually made it less profitable to run their business. You know, they'd have to make sure that there were a certain number of stops in each congressman's district, you know, because they're not, it's not like they're going to give money away for nothing. So, I mean, they're saying, okay, you scratch our back, we'll scratch your back. But anyway, with Hill, he was the first one to cross the Rocky Mountains with a railroad, and he had sent scouts out to find the absolute lowest passes that he could go through and find the best terrain for it. He even invented the switchback, which is a method of going up steep hill, because and even though everybody's read The Little Train That Could, you're not going to go straight up the side of a mountain. You're going to go up in a crisscrossing pattern, so you can get up over the mountain, and that's where the switchback came from. So
I did not know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's not in this article here. I saw a separate documentary on the Great Northern Railroad. So no amount of land grants or subsidies can create the knowledge and thinking to do these sorts of things. He did this on his own. He rose out of being poor, and you know, like everybody else in the 1800s, he rose out of being poor, became successful, and something else. I mean, this is the best part. Because he wasn't subsidized, because he was able to work efficiently, and I suppose you could theoretically be subsidized and efficient, but the tendency is if you need the subsidies, you're probably not that efficient. And quite frankly, most of the people that were running railroads back at that time would have been better suited selling suits and dresses and being seamstresses in a shop in Boston or something like that, because they weren't very good at running railroads. When most of these railroad companies were going, the subsidized ones, were going bankrupt and charging exorbitant prices, Hill was charging much less than everybody else was, and he was profitable. And the reason was because, there's music. The reason that he was so much more profitable was because he was thinking smart. He was working smart instead of just raking in all the subsidies.
Worms. And yeah, stop being envious of rich people, because their riches have enriched your life in a multitude of ways.
And then came the Interstate Commerce Act of 1887, which eliminated his ability to give preferential...